Hi, you are listening to Trading Pages, the sisterly podcast where we challenge each other to read books we would normally never, ever pick up at the bookstore. We share an immense love for books.
Just maybe not that book. Each week, we give each other a new book to tackle and then come together to discuss what we liked, what we didn't like, and who knows, maybe we'll even find something we love.
Hi, I'm Allie, and I'm the older sister.
And I'm Bronwyn, the younger sister, but not the youngest sister. She still hasn't watched all of the Star Wars movies.
Thanks for joining us on our adventures with Trading Pages.
Thanks to our mom for sponsoring this episode. She didn't give us any money. She just let me say nipples on a podcast and still says she's proud of me. This week, I challenged Allie to read The Foxhole Court by Nora Sokovic.
And I had B read Crash of Fate by Zoraida Cordova. Thanks for joining us.
So, Allie, I feel like today is a great day to say Black Lives Matter.
Fuck yeah. Absolutely.
So, we do not want to harp on this because we hope that you are doing your own research, that you are listening to Black voices, that you are trying to make a change. And I think that Amanda and Andrew, who are the co-hosts of Nerd and the head of Pants Pending, probably said it best when they said that this is not a political stance. This is a human rights stance. And it is not a political statement to say that you are with Black Lives Matter. And we want to make it very clear where we stand. We are two white girls who are making a podcast about books, so we don't really feel like it's our place to go into it as far as the discussion goes. We just would encourage you to listen to more Black voices. And I have a few podcasts that I would like to recommend personally. First of all, the Try Guys recently made a really excellent and eloquent podcast. Three of them are cis, het, white males, but there is one who he falls into several minorities, and I felt like he spoke very eloquently about what is going on. Another podcast that is really well spoken in general about their experiences as minorities, but recently when talking about Black Lives Matter, they have really spoken well, is the Minority Report. And then additionally, Higher Learning, which is a podcast that has sort of come out around these tumultuous times, but they have a lot of really great points and I have really enjoyed listening to them. So Allie and I, we are on the same page. We feel very strongly about this, that we support Black Lives Matter, but we hope that you are aware that you are doing the research and that you are listening to Black voices. So Allie and I are going to get lighthearted. We are going to talk about our books. We're going to joke. We're going to fight like sisters. But together, we are saying Black Lives Matter.
Black Lives Matter.
Thank you. So we are back. Time to talk about some book stuffs, some bookliness.
And why I'm mad at Bronwyn right now.
I know. So here's the thing is that upon rereading the first book, because that's what I do. I can't help it. Mm-hmm. I can't help but reread the book while Allie is reading so that I can refresh my memory because I'm a goldfish. And I reread the first book and I finished it and I went, oh, shit. I'm like, there is one very specific thing that Allie's going to be pissed at me about. But so we are talking about...
I'm wondering if it's going to match up, though. If the thing that you're thinking of is the thing that I'm mad about. We'll see.
I think I know you pretty well. But so we're talking about The Foxhole Court. Yes. Once again, if you're planning on reading The Foxhole Court, the All for the Game series... please do not listen to this podcast because we do not refrain from spoilers. We're very much full of spoilers. And if you haven't read the book, The Foxhole Court is basically about this guy, Neil, who is on a sport. It's a fake sport called Exie. It's basically like lacrosse and hockey and roller derby almost. Like, it's really, it's a very, very intense game. And this guy, Neil, he is, like, his dad was the butcher. He was somebody who committed crimes. And he is trying to kind of escape his past, and he's been on the run. And then he gets asked to join this professional exe team with a group of misfits who all kind of have, they're either getting a second chance or they have criminal records, things like that. And they all play on this exe team. And he kind of finds that he's really tired of running and he would like to stay put. But that does come with consequences. So, Allie, go ahead and discuss this book that I will remind you, me and my friends all cherish very dearly.
I don't think you're going to have a huge problem with any of my complaints, because any of my complaints are more questions that I have and things that I didn't entirely understood, because I'm just going to go ahead and tell you right now, I liked it.
Yes!
I liked it. It was good. It was good. I have a lot of questions, and there was things that didn't entirely make sense to me because I didn't know. It didn't make sense. It didn't fit in with the real world. But what I've been saying to you over and over and over again is that this is fiction, and you can take liberties with things if you want to. And, you know, so if there were things that didn't entirely make sense to me, I just kind of rolled with it, and I just made some notes to ask you about it later. But overall, the writing was really good. I was going to start with my complaints, but I knew you would suffer through it if I didn't just tell you that I liked this book. But let me get to my questions, because I have some questions. Okay so
I think I have an idea of what you're going to bring up, but I'll
okay,
just let
so
you.
Okay, so there's some, like, little things that I'm confused about, and then I'm going to get to the big thing. So I don't want to spend too much time on it, but the thing, like, where they get signed for 5 years, like, college is only for 4 years usually, and with most sports, if they're 5 years, they have to be redshirted for one of those years. Like, it's not typical for college athletes to sign for 5 years. So that confused me a little bit. You said she was Russian, so I thought maybe she wasn't familiar with how the American school system worked entirely. But I
can't answer that question. And the reason why I can't answer that question is because I know nothing about sports. I know absolutely zero about sports.
And I only know this because I was an RA, which a resident assistant, in a college dorm that housed a very large number of student athletes. To which this book, other than the 5 year thing that confused me, very accurate. Very accurate as far as, like, students that I met in college. I'm like, oh yeah, I fucking know that guy. Like, for sure.
No, I don't know about the 5 year thing. I don't know if it's maybe.
And, like,
I honestly, I could not answer that question.
Yeah, and there were some other weird things, how they talk about mental health. It almost was like a person who maybe, like, sort of understood the challenges of people that have experienced trauma deal with, or and have some understanding of mental health. Granted, I have 2 degrees in this, so of course I was looking at that with a slightly more critical eye, because the way that they talk about, you know, they refer to Andrew as being psychotic, and then talking about when he's on his mandatory medication and when he's off his medication, and how she described him being on his medication. It was almost like he had this weird euphoria, like he was high, like, and even Neil talks about, like, oh, I could tell that he was on something when he's talking about Seth before, spoiler alert, before Seth overdoses. And he says, well, I could tell that he was on something, but I didn't know what it was. And they're like, oh, he was only on antidepressants. Like, generally, if someone's on antidepressants, they don't seem like they're on something. And if they're working correctly in their balance, they should just appear as a normal person. And that also talks about how he takes them on and off, and also how when he does take them, he likes to take them for fun and chase them with booze. Again, you don't get fast acting results from medication like that. So it was a little confusing, and like the withdrawal symptoms they would go through. That Andrew, when he would go on and off his meds, it really seemed like someone who was coming off of meth or cocaine or heroin. And
I figured that would be one of the things that you would bring up, because I also thought that that was really weird that he was taking antidepressants. And anybody who's taken antidepressants know that it doesn't work where you just take one and it works, and then, you know, you stop taking one day or for a certain amount of time and it doesn't work. It kind of works that way with psychotic meds, but still not quite. And that was something that I think that I had to sort of suspend disbelief with, because, they made Andrew such a, like, and you find out even more in the later books that he really is a very, very, very troubled human being who has seen some shit. And when it came to the whole thing about the meds, I just kind of figured that was more of it almost felt like a sort of another injustice towards Andrew, if that makes sense. Yeah. Like, he is on these court-appointed meds that make him feel so funky, which that is kind of a stereotype that lasts with, oh, God, I took my meds and I just didn't feel right, and I didn't feel like myself. That's a pretty big stereotype for when you take meds. And that's not how you should feel, FYI, if you're taking any type of mental health meds and they make you feel like not yourself. You need to adjust your meds. Yeah. But that is sort of a stereotype that, you know, he was court appointed. He had to take these meds and they just wouldn't let him feel his feelings. They would rather sedate him.
But he wasn't even sedated, though. So I felt like that was just kind of another injustice
that Andrew
served. He wasn't even sedated, though, because he almost seemed more aggro when he was on them. Like, and then he'd come off and be sick and angry and really tired. But then when he was on him, he had fucking switchblades, you know, razor blades tucked into his arms. I'm like, whatever fucking meds he's on, number one, they're not working. And number two,
I fucking love that scene when he first fucking pulls that switchblade out of his fucking ribbons. And I was like, yes, bitch,
so,
yes.
And here's my other thing. So we'll get to my two complaints about why I'm mad. I was told this is a gay sports romance. And there's
I knew it.
Tension. I knew it. I'm so sorry. And I'm going to punish you for this with your recommendation this week. But like, there's definitely some tension. I thought for sure that and don't spoil it, because I did just start reading The Raven King. The Raven King. I just started reading it. So don't spoil it. But I thought for sure that Kevin was going to be the love interest for Neil. But now I'm wondering, like, Neil almost seems more asexual.
That's a very common misconception.
Because he even says, like, I'm not into anybody. But I wasn't sure if that was a result of his trauma. But I was told it was going to be a gay sports romance. So I was like, oh, of course, Neil's going to fall in love with somebody. But I actually felt more tension between Andrew and Neil. Mm-hmm. And, like, Andrew fucking hates him. He's such an asshole to this kid. But they have this. And so I'm like, is it enemies to lovers?
Yes.
Then, and he talks to him about, like, you're a math problem, but I'll solve you anyway. Like, ooh. Yes. Like, I'll solve you. So
I knew that's why when I said I reread the first book and I went, oh fuck, I forgot that there is no kissing in this book. Like, I forgot that, because
I want kissing.
Okay, but like,
I want kissing in my books.
I can tell you though that I had the same conversation with Mariah, and she probably could attest to this. I literally had this conversation with Mariah when I was reading the book, where I'm like, I'm pretty sure you promised me that this would be gay. And she's like, just wait, read the second book, go. And I did. I literally, when I read those books, I read them boom, 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 just one right after the other. And it is what we in the industry call a slow burn.
I like a slow burn warning. This is what I like about romance novels. Romance novels a lot of time come with these kind of labels. They will tell you in little italicized in the beginning of the book or even in the Amazon Kindle blurb, be like, this is a happily ever after. This is a slow burn. This is an insta-love. This is a enemies to lovers. This is and so you know right from the get-go what you're getting into. And so, honestly...
Spoilers. Why would you want to know that right off the bat?
Because when you're looking for escapism, you don't want to necessarily go through a whole book and then be disappointed at the end. Because then you find out. However, that's the whole point of this podcast, is that if this had come with a label, this is a slow burn, then I wouldn't have picked it up and I would have missed out on reading this because of that. I don't like so much the polar opposite of slow burn. I do not like when they're getting down and dirty chapter one. Mm-hmm. There needs to be some build up, you know, an emotion and some conflict in there. But a slow burn that has no kissing by the end of the book, I want some kissing.
I'm sorry. And I forgot, because to me, after I read the first book and then I got into the second book, to me it was worth the wait.
It all blurred together. Okay. And if it's worth the wait, I will stick around.
Yeah. And I think that is valid, because as much as I say, oh my gosh, why would you know, I would hate that, but I read fan fictions all the time that are like, this is a slow burn, this is what content is in this, here's what.
Yes.
And so I guess that it is understandable that you would want that type of warning. And I did, truthfully, I honest to God forgot. And I felt so bad, because I finished reading The Foxhole Court and I went, oh no.
You sold it wrong. It's okay.
Yeah.
It was more that I got to the end of the book and was like, wait, it's where's the rest of it? And I was like, I just finished it, and there was no kiss, no kissing. Yeah. I don't even know who the love interest is. I think it might be Andrew, but we're gonna find out. But I did immediately start reading.
If you do read The Raven King, please know that it is still a slow burn in The Raven King as well. The third book is
how long do I have to wait until they kiss, and how long do I have to wait till they get down and dirty?
I can't actually remember if they ever had sex. I'm trying to remember. I don't know if they actually did. I know that they kiss in the second book. I think. Maybe. I know it was great happened, because you were waiting for it. Like,
Yeah.
I remember, I'll hang in there.
Like,
that's the thing about a slow burn, is like when they finally kiss, you're like, fuck yes, yes, I'm ready.
Yes.
So
yes.
I think that these are all valid complaints, and I just, it's been a while since I read it, so I just remember. But
yeah. It was really good, though. It is... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, it's okay. The thing that I appreciated about the first book was the world building. I felt like they really set it up nice. And also, you haven't said a single thing about my female Exe players. Please.
Okay, no, let me get to that. So, first off, when you read the book description to me, I thought this book was going to be about a running team. I thought you said XC, like cross country.
Oh.
I thought it was going to be a book about running. But this is the other thing. I'm so glad you brought that up. So all of the characters in this book are really fabulous and really well fleshed out, even if you don't see a ton of them. And they all are misfits and they all come from these different places. But it's interesting how the group does have a schism in it. They don't all get along. And they all have these tragic pasts and issues, yet they've all dealt with it in different ways. And so while I didn't think that the mental health and the medication side was really well represented, at least as far as accuracy, I did like how, just because they had a troubled past, like, not every single one of them turned out the same way. Because Dan, she became the leader of the team. She's kind of she's the team mom. She wants to make sure that everybody's okay. She wants to be this strong leader. You know, Allison and Seth, they have their on-again, off-again relationship. And they say some interesting things about her past and how she looks really put together, and looks as if she could have come from a wealthy family, yet there has to be some reason why she's here, because everyone has some kind of troubled past. So I liked that. And I definitely loved like the girls being on the team and really just kicking ass and taking hits on the X in the middle of the XE game and just not even blinking. They were, So I did like that it was a co-ed sport, especially since even though it is a co-ed sport, they still are the underdog of all the other teams, because the other teams don't have girls on their team. You know, even though they can be on the field with them, they don't have them on. Only Palmetto State does. So I definitely really liked that.
Yeah. I was hoping that you would bring that up for sure, because I absolutely loved the female characters in the Fossil Court. So overall, you did like it. You did?
I did.
Okay.
Yeah. I wouldn't say that it was my favorite book I ever read, but I did enjoy reading it. I liked it. It was good.
But did you, like, did the drama of it all get to you? Like,
yes, it did, because I just have so many questions. And a lot of times the books that you give me have more questions than answers. However, I did feel like the questions that I have about Neil, because you do know certain things about him, but then even through his perspective, there's still so much that we don't know about Neil that he hints at. So even though we're looking at this story through his eyes, I don't know a lot. And I think that's really interesting to go through a story and continually be surprised. And really, Andrew was the dark horse of the story coming out and being like, oh, yeah, no, I'm really, you know, this tiny kid with an anger problem is somehow the one that everybody is afraid of. So one of the last notes I put in the book was, who the fuck is this guy? Like, he knows where the bodies are buried. He's got dirt on somebody, or he's affiliated with somebody. And I'm just waiting to find out what this kid is all about. Because we've got the Moriyamas. We've got Neil's dad, who's the butcher. We don't know who Andrew is yet. So I'm very excited to find out.
Yeah.
I'm happy with the questions. It definitely had me on, like, the edge of my seat.
It's not questions that are... like, just not going to get answered eventually.
Exactly. Yeah. I like when there's payoff eventually, as long as I know there's going to be a payoff at some point, because I love when little clues get woven into the story, and then in the end, you realize, that was what that was. Okay,
yeah.
That's good.
There is payoff. I can promise you there is payoff. There is, if you choose to continue reading, which I really hope that you do, I found that it really wrapped itself up nicely, that the questions that you have end up as a big reveal. And I'm not shocked very often by books, but I did find that there were several instances where I went, oh my God. So...
yeah.
I think that you will probably enjoy that aspect of it.
Yeah. So I'll keep you updated as I finish the last two books in the series.
Heck yeah. Well, I think that's about a good spot to wrap up so that we can move on to our next segment. Allie and I are going to take a break, and then we will talk about our Star Wars with Kissing
book. I've been waiting for this.
All righty. We'll see you in just a moment.
Welcome back. It is time for us to talk about the book that I gave Bronwyn this week, which was Crash of Fate by Zoraida Cordova.
Which is an awesome name. Every time I saw that name, I'd be like, I love that shit.
Yes. She also, let's see, her other pen name is, oh my gosh, it's going to kill me that I forgot to look this up. Her other... pen name is I'll put it in the description, but she also writes under another pen name, amazing, gorgeous. Go follow her Instagram, Zoraida Solo. She is so fabulous. I love everything about her. She is a Latinx author, which I mentioned on the previous podcast. She writes she has a whole Bruja series, which is incredible if you like magic and witches and things. And then she also has some middle grade and even some children's novels. So I highly recommend her. She is just really putting out some incredible material, and she just keeps like knocking out more and more just really incredible books. She also has a podcast with another author called Deadline City. It's really great if you're an aspiring author. Highly recommend that as well. But anyway, back to the book. So, Crash of Fate. Mm-hmm. This is one of the tales from Galaxy's Edge. So, this is actually a novel set in Batuu. So, it's in Blackspire Outpost. So, you can read this book and then you can go to Disneyland or Disney World and actually visit the places that are in this book. The main characters are Izzy and Jules. They were childhood friends. Izzy leaves really suddenly. But Izzy and Jules always, they continue thinking about each other. They're really the only true friends that these two people have had. And then they, circumstances bring them back into each other's lives. And there's secrets and there's romance. And I'm really interested to hear what you thought about it.
I hear the tentativeness in your voice because the last time you gave me a book, I literally tore it to shreds.
You destroyed one of my favorite things that I loved so much, and all of your points were valid, but it hurt, okay? You weren't wrong, but it hurt, okay? So I'm really scared.
So I will go ahead and relieve your anxiety because I did also enjoy Crash of Fates as well.
Enjoyed the Fox Support. I love when we have an episode where we both.
Yeah. Luckily, we are having an episode like this. I find that I don't even really want to call them complaints. I would say that the things that made it difficult for me to read are, like, because I'm, like, they're very personal. Like, I don't know how to put it. So, like, I feel like a little bitch saying this, but, like, I did not know enough Star Wars lore to read this book. And
really? And I'm shocked. Because I feel like any person could pick this up.
Well, no. It's not that I couldn't read it without enjoying it. That's not it at all. I just, like I said, I think that it's just, like, a little, like, I kind of got snippy at one point where I'm like, well, I don't know what that species is. And then I went, this is a book that takes place in a Star Wars universe where, and also it's canon. I didn't know this, but it's a canon book. This is.
Oh, yeah.
So it's not just like somebody's writing a Star Wars book and they think that it's kind of cool and they like, you know, because I always harp on fan fiction writers when they're writing something and I say, that's not canon. That wouldn't have happened. This is a part of the Star Wars universe. And so, of course, they would have to have. I loved the diversity of the characters. I loved the intricate details that they had. And in fact, I think back on to how one of my favorite podcasters, Griffin McElroy, he wrote a Star Wars novel, or he tried to, I'm not quite sure, but it was going to get published and they were harping on him because he said he felt the earth underneath him and they're like, well, earth doesn't exist in this universe. Like, that's how nitpicky they get with Star Wars stuff. So the amount of detail and the amount of knowledge and know-how that goes into this is immense, and it is wonderful and is extremely impressive. But I found that so many times while reading this book, and it was nice because there were a lot of times it said, oh, a Twi'lek. And I went, oh, I know that one, you know, or they were speaking Hattese or they would mention Jawas. And I'd be like, okay, yeah, I know this one. But then there were other times where I would be like reading about something, they would mention a species and she was pretty good about mentioning some of their features, but then I'd look up what that actually species was and I went, oh, and then that created the mind's eye picture. And
that's
so
what Wikipedia is good for.
Exactly.
I
that's what I was on Wikipedia.
Yeah,
I was on Wikipedia the whole time.
So So I grew up reading the books, watching the movies, and I still have a hard time picturing what the characters look like. And I think it's a very delicate balance between sticking to the story and having a really good plot, and at the same time being really descriptive. But you can't spend too much time describing an alien that ultimately people can't see and they're making up in their mind.
Yeah. And that's not even really a complaint. I feel like it would be a disservice to Zoraida to be like, well, her books had too many canon characters in it. Like, her characters are too diverse and too much in the Star Wars universe. Like, I really feel like that would be a disservice. And it was really only kind of a mild inconvenience that I found her using certain words that I went, oh, like, it's the most that I've ever had to really Google during a book reading to be like, okay, what does this character look like? What does this character look like? But I can imagine that if you are a staunch Star Wars fan, like you are in it, it really rewards you. And I can imagine that it does. And I feel like that's really great in and of itself, that it rewards you for knowing the lore, for being in the universe. The other thing that kind of got me, and once again, I feel like this is more preference than anything and is kind of like a little bit bitchy to complain about, because the audiobook was amazing. It was so good. It was so well done. It had like production. It had music. It Wow. had sound effects. Yeah, it had sound effects. It had music. It had productions. It had, like, I would highly recommend the audiobook because...
Oh my gosh, now I have to listen to the audiobook because yeah. I just read it. I didn't even consider how amazing the audiobook could
yeah,
be.
Yeah, the audiobook was super cool. And it, like, I mean, they had sounds of, like, and it was one narrator, which was really amazing because she put it through, like, she did all of the voices. She was great. And there were, so, like, when they would start up a speeder, there'd be the sound of a speeder starting. When she shot the blaster,
oh my
there'd
gosh.
Be the sound of a blaster.
Now I'm disappointed that I haven't listened to the audiobook.
You absolutely should. But here's my one complaint, and this is really silly, and I feel a little bit embarrassed admitting this. Well, not maybe not embarrassed. Maybe that's the wrong word, but I'm kind of hard of hearing. And when I am at work, I listen to the audiobooks at work. So there's barking dogs and there's the sound of grooming, like either my clippers buzzing or my blow dryer going. Then I'm listening to the audiobook. And then on top of that, there was like this massive production of this audiobook where there was music going over it. And so sometimes it was hard to listen. Like, and it's such a bitch thing to complain about. Be like, oh, it was hard for... They worked too hard on this. Like, I feel like that's what I keep saying. It's like, they put too much into this and it was hard for me to keep up. But it was a little bit tough. And then there were other times when I felt like the music was really... I would say that occasionally the music also got me... Like, it had me feeling emotions that I... was not really wanting to feel at that exact moment. Like, and they do that with movies where they sort of manipulate your emotions. But there was one scene in particular where she had just realized that she switched packages with Julian, with her pack. And
oh my gosh, that part is so intense.
Yeah, but they played really, really, really intense music. But then it didn't stop when she was standing and she was talking to the two friends and they were like, oh, yeah, well, he kind of hangs out here. And it was like a fairly casual conversation that these guys yeah. were having. And it was just like, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And I was like, oh, my God, I'm getting whiplash because I feel like I was so stressed. And I'm like, why is she not hurrying to go get the package? What? Because it's like the music was basically yeah. running, sprinting, I gotta go get it type music, and she's standing mm-hmm. and she's chatting. And so, and there were a couple of instances like that where I felt like the music was really forcing my mood to the mood, like forcing my mood into a certain space, which mm-hmm. is fine when you're watching movies and it's more cinematic. And they were trying to make the audiobook cinematic, but occasionally with books, I just really like to feel my emotions as I feel them. And you know that I read books very much go with the flow. I just vibe. So that was kind of mainly my only complaint, and those are extremely personal things to be fussed about. As far as the actual content of the book, I thought that it was really neat. I thought that it was really cool that this was not a book that was specifically, like, about the Rebels or about the First Alliance. They mention them, and you definitely know that this is happening within this universe, but it's very cool to say, okay, the Star Wars universe, we do focus on these characters, but all the time we wonder, what about the other people in this universe? What about the contractors on the Death Star? What about... And so I thought that it was really cool that we managed to kind of see a little glimpse into what other people were doing at this time. And also, Doc Ondar, he's like, he's in all of the Star Wars movies. He's in a lot of them. He's in the...
I feel like he's in Clone Wars.
Yeah, he's in the universe. Like, I recognize that name. So it was cool to be rewarded for knowing your lore and to see these things intersect and to also see more into the universe. And... The thing that was going on with Izzy and Jules could have very easily become a cliche. Oh, she's a far traveler and she can't stay anywhere and she can't stop. Jules, he's a farm boy and he loves his family and he can't. But the thing that I really felt was very well done was how each chapter is narrated alternatively by Jules and by Izzy. And so they... explain their thought process. And I felt like it was very valid in many points. A lot of times when I'm reading your weirdo romance novels and they're like, that was a dig. But normally they have these feelings where they're like, you know, oh my gosh, I could never talk to him about this because blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, yes, you fucking can talk to him about it. You can tell him.
They have that history. Even though they hadn't seen each other in so long, they had this deep history and trust with each other. And it's sort of like when you haven't seen a really dear friend in a really long time, and the moment that you see them, you're just instantly back into that flow and that vibe with them
and
again.
It's pretty valid, too, the fact that Izzy and Jules both wrestled with, well, hey, just because you knew somebody as a kid doesn't mean you know them as an adult. And that was something that I really appreciated. And the whole ritual that they went through with retracing her steps, I thought that was fucking adorable. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Where she, like, first they went back to her house and they found the doll, and then they went swimming, and the swimming was kind of where they had the more romantic scene. And they had discussions about sort of where their moral compass was and how they felt and where they were in their life. And they weren't sure where they were in their life. And Jules maybe wanted to travel, but he also was torn because he wanted to be with his family. And she maybe wanted to settle down, but she was also torn because she didn't really belong anywhere. And it was a really interesting dynamic that they had that I appreciated them coming together. It felt natural. It didn't feel like, oh, because he's my childhood friend and I'm lonely. And she even brings that up where she kind of questions, am I lonely or am I actually attracted to Jules? Which I thought was very, very,
it was authentic.
Yeah, authentic. That's the word that I'm looking for. It was very authentic. And I really appreciated that was in there. And I enjoyed reading it because it did not feel like, oh my gosh, this is my best friend Jules from childhood. We're going to go on a crazy adventure together and everything's going to be great. It had its ups and downs. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sort of the words that she used, she oftentimes would go, oh man, why did I say that? And the words that he used, he would go, oh man, why did I say that? And that's what it's like in real life when you're trying to figure out relationships. Yeah. Is you leave a conversation with somebody going, fuck, did I really need to say that?
And you question it and you want to make a good impression.
Yeah. So,
and sometimes it doesn't always come across that way.
So the other thing, and I think you may be surprised to hear this, I'm not 100% sure, but I was afraid to bring this up because this character is the villain. She's not a good person. I fucking love Anatola. Holy shit. I'm so gay for Anatola. Like,
Yeah. She was a horrible person, though.
I know. I know. But, like...
She stole her boyfriend. Stole her boyfriend and just, like, fucked up her whole life.
Oh, God. At least, like, she for just then. Was, like, she's so fucking cool, though. Oh, my God. I know she... Listen, and I'm not saying that anything that she did was okay. I'm not saying that anything that she did was right or good. I'm not excusing any of her actions, but I'm just saying that my lesbian
really
heart
right now.
My lesbian heart was like, when she flipped that red braid over her shoulder, every time I was like, God, like, I couldn't fucking, like, my heart beat. I like, I don't know what it is. I fucking love her.
There's something wrong with you. It's like you had a lady heart on for, like, the evil main character.
Oh, God. I so did, though. I fucking love the shit out of her. And it's not actually, it's kind of...
Oh, she was a great character, though.
She is.
Wasn't just like a muh-ha-ha-ha.
Yeah.
I'm the bad guy. She was a really well-developed character.
She was. And she also,
which,
she wasn't
kudos,
just
Zoraida,
bad for the sake of being
queen,
bad.
You just are a fantastic writer.
She really had I don't know, like, I don't know if motive is the right word, but it wasn't just like, I'm evil for the sake of being evil. It really did kind of come down to... Listen, honey, we're all smugglers, we're all bounty hunters, we're all doing our fucking job. And I just really thought that she was a really well-done character. And it is a joke among my friends that I tend to really enjoy bad characters, evil characters more. Like, I either go for the sunshine characters my favorite, or I go for, like, just the terribly horrible evil character, which this next book that I'm having you read, I actually, my favorite character is the complete and total asshole character, and you're gonna come to my house.
This makes so much sense because of your long time obsession with Inuyasha, because Inuyasha is literally the biggest asshole ever.
Yeah.
And yet you still adore that evil puppy dog.
I know, but so it is, well, he had his moments. He had his soft moments, but it is a joke that I tend to like evil characters, and I just, like, I was just really gay for Anatola, and it might also possibly have been the way that the audiobook narrator...
Well, I'm just like, I mean, I don't hate that you liked it.
Well, the way that the audiobook narrator narrated her was she made Anatola have this really sultry voice, and I was like, you can't do that to me!
Fucking A, man.
I'm too gay for this.
I am at work right now.
I know. So I was really like...
And you didn't think romance would have anything for you.
Well, I mean, like, it just... It was really shocking to me because I just found myself really infatuated by this side character, this evil side character, where if they wrote a book that was just about Anatola, give it to me. I would fuck with that book. Like...
Okay, so that seems like a good point for us to wrap things up. So we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back with our selections for our next episode. Thanks so much, and we'll see you when we get back.
Once upon a time, there was a woman named Amanda and her overgrown man-child husband, Andrew. One, an intelligent, responsible adult. The other, a lost cause. And together, they bring you Bumbling Sanity.
I still don't know what caused it because I did not find it.
Ghosts!
Like, obvious.
It was ghosts. It's
always... I did actually go... when I saw it. Yeah, they were upset about that, but...
I'm sorry, but you're going to be about...
I'm washing my clothes with beer because I eat my Tide now.
Join them as they promote everyday kindnesses, chronicle their strange lives, and make you laugh together, as a family should. Listen today at bs.pantspending.com or subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Pocket Casts, or wherever you listen.
Hey, did you remember to tell them we're definitely not at all like that Burr Martin Experience show?
What? No! Don't interrupt me! Bumbling Sanity, a completely unique show unlike any others. Probably.
Mm-hmm.
welcome back. This has been a really fun episode this week because for once
we both liked the books that we were given.
So yeah, it's been, I mean, and not that it's that surprising, because we do have really similar tastes at times, but it's just, you know, sometimes you win them and sometimes you don't. But I'm really glad you liked the book this week.
Yeah, I'm glad you liked the book this week too, because I'm very excited to introduce this next book to you. It's all that you have heard of for the last week, and I'm not going first. I will wait patiently and wait my turn.
It's turn to go first this week. Yeah, she's been dropping some not so subtle hints that I don't know if it's so much that it's a challenge that it's going to be a big challenge, that she's kind of breaking rules a little bit, thinking out of the box. So I really have no idea what to expect this week. I never guess based on title alone, ever.
You're definitely not going to guess based on title alone. I'm just going to say that right now.
Okay. So, all right. So
you go first, though. It's your turn. Okay.
So your book for next week's episode is Hothead.
Oh. I can't explain the feeling that just racked my entire body just then.
I've been dropping hints about this one for a while.
Yeah, so if you have not listened to our podcast before, what we do is we will give each other the title of our books and then we'll guess what it's about. And
oh yeah, I forgot my to guess, say.
So my guess for Hothead would be, is it about blowjobs in a furnace?
Okay, so
am I right? Because if I'm right, then I quit right now. No more podcasts, no more TV, like, no more computer.
You're like so close, but really far away at the same time. So blowjobs, yes. Because it's a gay romance.
Okay.
It's male-male romance.
Okay.
By
Yum-Yum.
Yum-Yum. Yeah.
Yum-Yum.
By one, every author I give you is one of my faves, but Damon Swade has a very special place in my heart. So Hothead is a male...
Oh, quick question. Is that a male author?
Yes, it is.
Oh, excellent. Okay, then I'm even more excited.
Okay, awesome.
Because gay romances written by male authors are, in my opinion, this is not like a sweeping statement, but they tend to do a little bit better at not doing like the female gaze, male characters type stuff.
No, so. And honestly, it's so fucking sexy. Like, even though it is not catered to women, at least it doesn't feel like it, it is fucking hot as shit. This thing is like, it'll leave you like red in the face. And hot under the collar, like, for sure. But anyway, Hothead is a male-male romance written by the fabulous Damon Swade. I have met him at a book con, and I loved every second of it. He's incredible. And it is about firefighters.
Oh, my God! Are you kidding me?
No. What did you think a gay romance called Hothead was going to be about?
So I was like low-key right, and I kind of... I'm not mad about it, but like, I'm mad about it. Like,
can I read you the blurb? It's so good.
I mean, this is... yeah.
Oh, and first, I also have to say, this is a direct quote from Damon Swade. Hothead is the gay tway drug of male-male romance. I swear to you. So when we were talking about, when I met him at the book con, I had a whole conversation with him. I said, oh my gosh, I love you. I love your books. I specifically really love Hothead. That was the first male-male romance I ever read and really opened me to this. I never thought that, you know, male-male romance would be something that would appeal to me because, you know, why, as a heterosexual female,
you could see why, oh, maybe male-male wouldn't
it's
be for me. He says it's so...
It's a thing.
It's a thing. He told me, you know, that's actually really interesting. They did a poll of romance readers, and the vast majority of women, their first male-male romance was Hothead by Damon Swain. And so
that's like if you asked anime fans who like boys love novels, and they were like, what was your first boys love anime? And they'd be like, it was definitely Junjo Romantica. If you're listening to this and you're a BL fan and you've watched Junjo Romantica, you owe me 20 cents. Thank you very much. Because I'm right, and I called you out.
Yeah, so this is, it's listed as one of the top 100 romance novels of all time by Goodreads. Here's the blurb. Where there's smoke, there's fire. Since 9/11, Brooklyn firefighters... Don't fucking laugh while I read the blurb.
I tried hard not to. I really tried.
Brooklyn firefighter Griff Muir has wrestled with impossible feelings for his best friend and partner at Ladder 181, Dante Anastasio. Unfortunately, Dante is strictly a ladies' man, and the FDNY isn't exactly gay-friendly. For 10 years, Griff has hidden his heart in a half-life of public heroics and private anguish. Griff's caution and Dante's cockiness make them an unbeatable team. To protect his buddy, there's nothing Griff wouldn't do, until a nearly bankrupt Dante proposes the worst possible solution. Hothead.com, a gay porn website where uniformed hunks get down and dirty, and Dante wants them to appear there together. Griff may have to guard his heart and live out his darkest fantasies on camera. Can he rescue the man he loves without wrecking their careers, their families, or their friendship?
I've read this fan fiction. I know I have.
This is why I love romance, because it's all of your fan fiction fantasies.
It's like, I mean, I'm in pretty sure that I have read this, like, not necessarily the firefighter part, but I'm pretty sure I've read the fan fiction where it's like, you want to make a little bit. Actually, you know what? I'm pretty sure my friend, yes, actually, I'm trying to think of the name right now, but it was a Attack on Titan fan fiction. And it was, like, essentially the same thing, which I'm, like, absolutely tickled by that I can think of an AU. But,
well, I mean, I thought this would be pushing you a little out of your comfort zone, because this one is definitely very hot, very steamy. I would call it maybe a little bit of a slow burn, sort of, as far as, like, the relationship goes, like, without giving you too much spoilers, but it gets pretty hot, like, from the first chapter. But it's really interesting, and, you know, I'm going to
give... Does it get hot because the building is on fire, or does it get hot because...
Both. Both. Oh. So, and it's really interesting because it's, you know, kind of a throwback to, you know, the 9/11 and, you know, all... And talks about the effects that it had on them personally, not just professionally, but personally, and they're struggling with, it's been a minute since I read it, so I can't remember if there's maybe some PTSD kind of stuff, but definitely, 9/11 is pretty cataclysmic for a lot of things that happen in this story, and really is... It's about the relationship at the heart of it. It's got some really hot sex, but it's very story and relationship driven. And so I'm excited for you to read this one.
Okay, well, I have to tell you that I no longer feel bad about the book that I'm recommending to you.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Just going to say that.
Yeah.
So should we take a quick break and then we'll come back with my book?
No, let's just do it right now.
Oh, that's right. We don't take a break, do we?
I know. I was like, what are you doing?
I don't know. I never know what I'm doing. What am I doing, ever?
Okay, so give me that title.
I no longer feel bad about the book that I'm going to give you. However, this is going to require a little bit of a lead up, a little bit of an explanation. And I just want you to know that it's going to be worth it for me. But I just am very excited for you to experience this. So, first of all, I'm not going to give you that title right off the bat because,
what?
Like I said...
Oh, yeah, you got to do, like, a whole lead up.
I got to do a whole lead up. So I was trying to think of ways to get you to read the type of stuff that I read. And while it is surrealist novels, it's also a whole bunch of anime and manga. Now, or I don't read anime. I'm a fucking idiot. I said it again. I said it in the first episode and I went, I'll never say that again. And now I'm fucking doing it. But so I read a lot of manga, and manga is released in serialization, so it's often released chapter by chapter, volume by volume, and if you are somebody who reads manga, you usually subscribe to a specific manga delivering platform, like a legal one, and it just has all of your manga in one place. And I'm going, I don't know how I'm going to have Allie read any of these mangas that I enjoy without making her read 82 volumes of something. And so then I thought, my friend reminded me that something called light novels exist. So
yes, I remember this because we were talking about when we did number 6, you said make sure you don't buy the light novel of number 6.
Exactly. So we're going to go a little bit more in depth into what exactly a light novel is. So a light novel is a style of Japanese novel primarily targeting high school and middle school students. I'm taking this straight from the Wikipedia page because I knew I wouldn't remember this. But the average length of a light novel is about 200 words, so like the minimum expected for a Western novel. And they're usually published in like what's called a bunkabung size, so they're like really teeny, teeny, tiny books that will fit in your bookshelf and save space. And a distinguishing characteristic of a light novel is that they are illustrated with an anime or manga art style and are often adapted into such media. They are mainly published in separate book volumes, while some of them have their chapters serialized in anthology magazines before being collected in book form, similar to how manga is published. So this series that I am having you read, it comes in 18 light novels. So I'm not going to have you read 18 light novels. And I'm like racking my brain. I'm going, how am I going to have Allie experience this series that I love, that I've read and I've, you know, gone through all of it, but I did it over a span of 5 years.
Oh,
so I'm going to have you read 3 light novels.
Okay.
3 light novels that cover season 1 of this anime. And I double checked and I reread. It is season 1 of this anime.
You mean manga?
Well,
became an anime.
Yes, so it is an anime as well. So I figured that season 1 of the anime would be a good stopping point in the light novels.
Okay.
Because the light novel kind of just goes and goes and goes and goes and goes for 18 volumes. So now I'm going to, this is where I get really, really mischievous.
Wait, because this isn't the big reveal?
No, it is not. It absolutely is not. So that is where I'm breaking the rules. I'm having Allie read 3 books, but they're 200-page books. They're really short, and they have pictures in them. So
okay.
So here is the name of this light novel that I'm going to have you read. Light novel turned manga turned anime. And I will just say that this is one of my top 5 anime, definitely like my top 3 light novels that I've read. But the name of this book is Durarara. Can you guess what it is about?
I fucking hate you. Durarara?
Durarara.
No.
Durarara. Durarara. Durarara.
Durarara. Durarara. Mm-hmm. I don't. Is it Animal Shifters?
No. And you guessed that twice in a row, so I demand a different guess.
Okay, it is, it's set in high school contemporary.
Ooh. Ooh.
Bully romance.
Nah, so close.
Oh, actually, enemies to lovers.
Not at all.
Okay, no.
Nope, not even, nope,
gay,
actually,
gay.
You had the
high school
had,
gay
right,
contemporary.
Nope, the only part they had right was high school. There's, it's,
oh,
boy. Well, there's a gay character, but it's questionable. So here's why this is so mischievous to me, is that the title Durarara means absolutely nothing. So this novel is written by Ryogo Narita, and he is one of my favorite light novel authors because he kind of just does whatever the fuck he wants. He has his own universe called the Narita-verse, like said by his fans, where like the shit that takes place in his universe is just like he does whatever he wants. And the title Durarara, the way that that title came about was he was writing his book, it was about to be published, and his editor goes, "What is the name of your book? Seriously, what is the name of your book?" And he's like, I don't know the name of my book yet, I don't know. And his editor finally calls it, he's like, "You have to give us a name now." And he goes, "Okay, Durarara." And he just like gave random sounds, and his editor goes, "Okay, yep, we're doing it. That's the name of this book."
So, that is ridiculous.
So the title means absolutely nothing. And as far as describing what this book is about, this book has basically all of the things that you have disliked in the books.
What?
That I have given you.
Why?
So first of all, there is an inside joke in the Durarara fandom that even though you have watched and read Durarara, when somebody asks you what it is about, you say, "I don't know," because you don't know what Durarara is about. So I asked a few of my friends as a joke. I said, "Can you please tell me how to explain to my sister what Durarara is about?" And here are a few of the answers I got. My friend Wolf said, "Don't worry about it." My friend Eli, who wrote our opening title song, he said, "It's your janky anime." My friend Minji said, "Oh, you know, coming of age, love triangle, societal interconnectedness inception." My friend Izzy said, "Color gangs, and there's a headless horseman, but the horse is a motorcycle, and the head's in a jar. I don't know, man. Stop asking me."
What the fuck is this?
So let me give you sort of... I had to collect two book blurbs and book explanations because I didn't find that either of them really did it justice. There are 10 main characters.
What the fuck? Dude, can you chill with all the fucking characters? I can't keep track of this shit. There's too many people.
You are probably going to have to write down who's who because they all also basically have an alias as well.
What the fuck, man? How am I supposed to keep track of this stuff?
I'm sorry. I take so much joy from this and it's so mischievous, but this is a challenge because what you are supposed to do with Durarara is you're supposed to just read it and just vibe. Like, you're just...
every book you give me. Just read it and just experience it. Don't think about things like plot and... Oh, never mind the fact that, like, when I try to give you a book that you're supposed to just vibe to and enjoy the hot sex, and then you completely tear it apart and call your lawyer and research what a fucking NDA is, and then you give me this crazy shit and say, "Just vibe with it."
So,
don't worry about the plot. Just vibe with it.
There is a plot. There is a linear plot. The thing is that it is told from the perspective of 10, at least that's how many I counted, 10. It's told from the perspective of 10 main characters that are all really unique. And it's kind of more of a book that you are supposed to just... It's like immersion. You're getting immersed into the characters and how they're connected and all this other stuff. Let me read this blurb for you real quick and see if this helps at all. In Tokyo's downtown district of Ikebukuro, which is a real place, amidst many strange rumors and warnings of anonymous gangs and dangerous occupants, one urban legend stands out above the rest. The existence of a headless black rider who is said to be seen driving a jet black motorcycle through the city streets. Mikado Ryogamine has always longed for the excitement of the city life, and an invitation from a childhood friend convinces him to move to Tokyo. Witnessing the Black Rider on his first day in the city, his wishes already seem to have been granted. But as supernatural events begin to occur, ordinary citizens like himself, along with Ikebukuro's most colorful inhabitants, are mixed up in the commotion breaking out in their city.
Okay, so it's supernatural, so maybe I can get behind that.
It is. It's super supernatural.
I like that.
Yeah, and it takes place in sort of modern Japan. And what I would really encourage you to do is to Japanese culture and sort of the bustling life of Ikebukuro. They do a lot of the stuff that Mikado describes is very like what Japan is about. Yeah. And Mikado, before he kind of gets into this, he sort of is a very stereotypical Japanese schoolboy. Mm-hmm. And I would really encourage you to try to enjoy it. And this is a challenge because it has multiple characters. You're supposed to just vibe with it. There are going to be questions that do not get answered, and you're just going to have to accept it. And even I struggle with that because the very last light novel that came out, it ended with a question. It ended with Narita being like, and I'm not actually going to tell you what happens. And we're like,
oh
what?
My gosh. Cliffhanger. See, that's the other thing that romance novels will give you. It'd be like, you know, this with like the happily ever after, it would also say that, you know, if it's in a series, they'll say it doesn't end on a cliffhanger. Because I want to know. And be prepared.
So the other thing that I was kind of going to have you do along with this, and you can say no, but I figured that this would be a fun experiment.
Okay.
Is I want you to watch like 3 or 4 episodes of the anime.
Oh, I'm totally down for that. Yeah.
Yeah. And just see if you can kind of understand what I'm calling the vibe. Like when I say suffering with jazz music, that is like the sort of the theme of Durarara, and the music is really cool, the visual is really cool, and the fast-paced nature of it is really cool. It's super fun
everything
to watch, and for me,
you just love such obscure things, and I'm not gonna yuck your yum, but I just find it so funny because it's so niche, so obscure, whereas I'm like, hot firefighters, yeah.
And I mean, that's the whole point of this podcast is that that's what we discovered was that we have really different tastes in books, and I really like these niche things. But when you come visit my house, you will find that like there's a lot of Durarara stuff in my house, and it is one of my favorite franchises, and it definitely is one of my favorite franchises because of how, like, weird and funny and obscure it is. And there are a lot of different jokes and memes that have come out of this franchise, and it's really beloved. But we all agree that it's beloved because it's just fucking weird. Oh. We just like how weird it is.
All right. Well, like I said, I'm going to wait to pass judge. I'm gonna go in with an open mind, and I will read the 3 light novels, and I'll watch 1 or 2 episodes of the anime before we record again. And if nothing else, my palate will be expanded.
I don't know. I kind of think that you're gonna... I don't know if you're gonna hate it. I definitely think that...
I might not get it, but I don't... Because I don't think I've hated anything, but there have been times where I'm like, yeah, I just didn't get it.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I am awaiting your handwritten notes about all of the characters, though, because... Yeah. I just feel like
that's the thing I do.
And when I watched the anime first and then I read the light novels, and when I watched the anime, I just didn't give a fuck. I was like, oh, Mikado and Taro, okay, those are the same people. All right, fine. And then I like next episode I went, wait, who's that again? So you just vibe with it, Allie. You just gotta vibe with it. He's got a vibe, Durarara, you know? What's the name of your book? I don't know, Durarara.
Durarara. Okay. All right. So,
are you telling me that you don't love that story that they told him he had to title his book, and he just was like, fucking, these sounds that came out of my mouth just now.
But, like, you couldn't do that with English. Like, if I needed a title for a book, and they're like, well, what is it going to be called? And I just said, la lulu la. They'd be like, okay, great. No.
That's what I love about it, though, is that well, because light novels, they just get released on such a quick, fast-paced schedule, and they get out, they get put out very quickly and very rapidly.
He just, like, didn't, because it was, like, the it was such a fast-moving train, that he just didn't have time. It's like, we need it, we need it now.
Well, it's funny because people debated for a really long time about what durarara meant, and they thought it might have been an onomatopoeia for a motorcycle starting because of the character Celty.
Oh.
That it might have been durarara, durarara, like that. But, and then the author was like, sorry guys, but no.
Oh my gosh.
Because there were like heavy debates about what this title meant and what it meant and all this. They were like, no. Sorry.
Oh my gosh. Well, alrighty. That's exciting. But join us on our next episode and see how that all turns out.
Next episode is going to be a trip, I think.
Yeah, it is. Oh my gosh. Yes. What is this? This is episode 4? Yeah. So this episode was great, but I think that episode 5 may be like peak. Trading pages, but
I think so.
On that note, thanks so much for listening. If you're enjoying this podcast, you can find it on Spotify, Google Podcasts, iTunes, or wherever you listen. This podcast is hosted by Anchor FM and is a part of the Pants Pending Studios Entertainment Network. Make sure you click subscribe so you don't miss any of our new episodes and leave us a voicemail on the Anchor app. You might even appear in one of our episodes. You can also become a supporter, which we really appreciate because books ain't cheap. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Trading Pages Pod and Facebook at Trading Pages Podcast.
Want to ask us questions? Recommend a book? Challenge Allie to a 1v1 Star Wars trivia battle? Send us an email at tradingpagespodcast@gmail.com. Join us on our next episode where we discuss Hothead by Damon Swade and Durarara by Ryogo Narita.
Thanks so much. Bye. And Black Lives Matter.
Yes, Black Lives Matter.
One. Clap. Allie! I thought you were going to do 3, 2, 1, start. Well, no, because our last clap was shit. Allie! Alexandria! Toast! Please! Okay, ready?
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to be so zen right now.
Can't.
Okay, let me just crack my knuckles. There
okay.
We go. Is that good? Is that good for you? All right. 3, 2, 1. Clap.
Trading Pages is now part of the Pants Pending Studios Entertainment Network. To find out more about Pants Pending Studios and everything it has to offer, visit pantspending.com.